So I waited in line for over 7 hours with all my luggage, and my luggage included 3 duffel bags full of cheese and other Greek goodies.
Weren't you also, like, maybe kidnapped in Cairo?
Well, I don't want to scare people away from these places.
Well, why do we put ourselves through this? Welcome to the Near and Far podcast. I'm Zachary Ellis, and this show is about embracing curiosity, leaping beyond your comfort zone, and learning from adventurers like yourself who have traveled near and far. When I was younger, I thought travel would never be attainable for someone like me. It was something that richer people did, like White Lotus characters. By the time I graduated college, I had only flown twice, and then I met today's guest, Sophia Theodisiou. 1 year from my birthday, she got me a passport, and that changed everything. Soon after that, an internship sent me overseas to follow an orchestra around Russia, which was quite the culture shock. Sophia taught me travel doesn't have to be expensive if you're creative and just a little bit scrappy. Since then, we've been on so many adventures. We've driven across North America 7 times, ventured to at least a dozen different countries together, but marrying her has been the greatest adventure of all. Welcome to the show, Sophia.
Thank you.
You have been traveling from a very young age, because why was that? Why have you been such a jet setter your whole life?
Well, my dad is a pilot, and one of the first pictures of me as a baby is me, I think I'm 5 or 6 weeks old, and I'm sitting outside the stairs to a Cessna, some sort of Cessna. And my parents were taking me somewhere in upstate New York, where I was born. And yeah, you know, when you have a parent who's a pilot, travel becomes pretty attainable because you get free tickets. They come with a caveat. So the free tickets, usually you can only get on a flight if there's space available. And you've seen, everyone here has probably seen how full flights are these days. So it's been like that for a long time. And I've gotten stuck some pretty interesting places traveling that way. But it's a great way to travel on the cheap if you've got time.
And if you have family who works for an airline.
Exactly.
What's the most interesting experience you've had getting stuck someplace? I imagine you seem like the kind of person who would make the most of those experiences.
Yeah, we used to get stuck a lot growing up. So a little bit of background. My mom's parents lived in Chicago and we lived in Greece. So we would fly every summer to visit them for free, of course, because who can afford to fly from Greece to Chicago every year with real tickets?
Right.
So we got stuck a lot of places traveling that way. We've gotten stuck in New York and St. Louis. 1 year we got stuck in Amsterdam. And this was kind of interesting because the flights from, we got on a flight from Athens to Amsterdam and that was fine. And then the flight to Chicago was full. And then the flight to Chicago the next day was full. There was only one a day. And then the flight the next day was full. And then we thought, well, maybe we should try to go back. And then all the flights back to Greece were full. So we were just kind of stuck in Amsterdam for about a week. And it was really fun. It was me, my mom, and my little brother. And I think I was maybe 10 or 11 at the time. And we walked around the city and saw all the museums and stayed in a different cheap hotel every night. And I think one night or two, maybe we stayed at the airport. I can't remember. But we eventually ended up making it to Chicago, which was nice. I think this was one of those, it was the trip where for the first time I saw a bed in a closet. We had rented this hotel room and we were told it had enough beds in it.
Like a trundle bed? Is that what those are called?
I'm not sure what they're called. Maybe it's a trundle bed, but so we booked this hotel room and we thought, great, it's cheap. And then we went into the room and it was supposed to have 2 beds and it only had one. So we thought, oh, maybe that's why it's cheap. And then my mom was trying to put something away in the closet, and she opened what she thought was a closet, and out falls this bed.
Oh.
And then that was the second bed.
So a tip for all of you listeners, check your closets.
Yeah, if you can't find the bed, it might be in the closet.
You never know what travel goodies are going to be in there. I imagine your family was able to go some pretty sweet places with these perks.
We were. We went to, because we lived in Greece, we went to a lot of islands. So that was really fun. You know, as a kid, you maybe don't appreciate it always, but definitely appreciated it. We got to go all over Europe. We got to go to the U.S. several times. We even got to travel within the U.S. a little bit growing up. Oh. So we got to go to Boston and New Orleans and some other places.
That sounds like such a rich childhood, getting to just go and experience it, all of these places far from where you grew up. And your mom must have such patience to, while your dad is off flying places, she has had you and your little brother in economy seats in an airplane.
She did. She was really good at bringing stuff for us to do. So she'd always bring puzzles and coloring books. And of course, this is before planes had little seatback screens. There was
so you couldn't just put on Paw Patrol. Or...
No Paw Patrol. Or... No iPads.
What were we growing up with? What?
Right? Yeah, no, we had no tech, really. Not even music players. She would bribe us with plastic animals and coloring books and puzzles. And the other thing she would do is when we were traveling long flights was the only time she would let us have gum with sugar in it. So real gum. Ooh. So it was the one time a year that she'd let us buy this bubble gum that we really wanted. And we'd only get to buy it for the flights if we were really well behaved on the flights. So it was a good bribe. It worked well.
Oh, wow. Travel tip number two, bribes work. Wow. Yeah, good for her and good for you and your brother. What about your dad? Does he have some amazing travel stories from flying?
He does, but you'd probably have to get him his own episode. He's got a lot of them.
Fair, fair, very fair. What was your favorite way to pass the time on an airplane besides behaving for bubblegum?
That's a good question. I've always liked to read, so I would read a lot on planes. I also still really like just looking out the window of an airplane. Now I like to do it sipping a glass of wine, but back then, of course, that wasn't an option.
Right.
But just a lot of reading and drawing, and those flights felt really long back then, of course. It felt like we'd been on the plane for about a week by the time we finally landed.
Still feels like that sometimes.
Sometimes, definitely. But the flight attendants were always really nice, and other passengers were always really impressed that we were so well-behaved, so they'd be pretty nice to us as well.
Would the flight attendants know that you were family of an employee?
I think sometimes they did. I'm not actually sure. I think they did when we flew Olympic Air, which hasn't existed for many years now, but we would sometimes fly from Athens to JFK on an Olympic airplane or aircraft. And I think the flight attendants might have known then. They'd always try to upgrade us if they could, which of course me and my brother didn't really know what that meant. We just knew that it meant we got to sit in the nice nose of a 747 and play on the floor. And yeah, I mean, this was back in the day when people could still smoke on airplanes. And I know I'm dating myself here, but yeah, I've had some pretty long flights as well stuck in the smoking section, which is an interesting experience.
Yeah, it always baffled me that airplanes would have a smoking section because it's all recycled air. And if somebody is smoking on one part of an airplane, it's going to get pumped to another part of the airplane.
For sure. The planes had a special aroma back when smoking was allowed. But it was, I think the difference was whether or not you would be next to someone who was actively smoking. We've definitely had a couple flights when we were kids where we'd sit next to some Greek grandma or grandpa who just chain smoked for 10 or 11 hours.
Oh, wow.
It was a little special.
Did you have a favorite destination that you and your family went to on these, they're called standby tickets. Have we mentioned that yet?
I don't know if we have.
If I worked for an airline, how would you go about booking this perk?
Oh, I think each airline, well, nowadays they all have apps that you just sign yourself up for the standby list if you're the family member of a crew member. But back in the day, we would get these paper tickets that literally had a carbon copy of the ticket on the backside. And anytime we didn't make it on the flight or if we made it on the flight, some airline employee would just write on it with a pen to indicate that we had cashed that ticket, I guess.
Oh, how old are you?
I'm 34. But this was...
So this was a long time.
It was a while ago. I think it might have taken Greek Airlines a couple more years than some of the more modern some of the U.S.-based carriers to catch up to non-paper tickets.
Did you have a favorite place that you and your family went with this perk?
Well, I really loved going to Chicago to see my grandparents and my aunt and uncle. And I don't think I had a favorite place. I really enjoyed being able to go to the islands, but definitely Chicago. That was our big trip of the year.
And I know at home, your dad spoke Greek to everyone. Your mom spoke English to everyone. When you went to Chicago, were you and your brother so excited that you could use your second language? Or...
We were. There's a lot of Greeks in Chicago, so Greek isn't that much of a secret language there.
Oh, so everyone knew. You could never reliably know that you and your brother were confidential.
Exactly. And also, my grandparents spoke Greek. My mom's parents are Greek. They just lived in Chicago. So a lot of their friends and extended family, they were all Greek. But I remember we would see friends who were part of the broader Greek community whose kids had grown up in Chicago and they didn't speak Greek. And they were always a little jealous of me and my brother. And we felt kind of special the way kids do when they have a secret.
And you could go to Greek town and understand what all of the different letters meant.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, has one of the top 10 Greek populations outside of Greece. I think
New
York.
The second or third, actually.
Okay, yeah, because New York, Astoria is up there, Melbourne, Australia, Buenos Aires, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are some amazing Greek restaurants in Chicago. I'm guessing most listeners would make it there before they make it to actual Greece.
Chicago's an okay substitute.
Yeah. Well, let's take a brief moment. When we come back, let's chat about just some of the absurd situations that you've found yourself in while traveling, including one that involves 3 duffel bags full of cheese. Near and Far Podcast is looking for future guests. If you or someone you know would like to share your stories or experiences with other listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Reach out to the show at www.nearandfar.travel. That's nearandfar.travel to tell us why you'd be great on a future episode. Sophia, what's this I hear about 3 duffel bags full of cheese?
Oh, man. So, I want to say this was Christmas 2022.
To be specific, wasn't it like 2 days before Christmas 2022?
I think it was Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve 2022.
That's relevant.
I was coming back from seeing my grandma in Greece and seeing my dad and my half siblings and my cousins, and it was winter break, so I wasn't at work. And I had a routing from Athens to JFK to Salt Lake City to Boise, and I started the day in Athens, and there'd been historically high winds in the U.S. Maybe some folks who also travel remember this, and a lot of flights were really disrupted. Really, really high, almost typhoon-like winds in much of the eastern half of the U.S.
Oh, yeah. Weren't there, like, whiteout conditions along, like, it was a big system of blizzards that I believe Delta and Southwest were the most affected that year?
I think so. It was
thousands of flights canceled.
Yeah, so I thought I'd be okay because I was there the day after all that had happened. But there was still really strong wind over the Atlantic. So the flight from Athens to JFK was a direct flight. It was scheduled to be, I think, 11 hours or so. And then that day, because of the wind, the actual flight time was something like 14 and a half because there was such a strong headwind. Yeah, it was crazy. I think the pilot said that it was literally at the limit of what that particular plane could have flown that day.
Whoa.
So we took off on time, but we were late, essentially. So landed in JFK, and it was just total chaos. It was super cold on the ground. I think it was negative degrees outside. It was sunny, but it was really windy and really cold. And got out of the plane, went through customs, and we'd been so delayed that I missed my connection to Salt Lake City, and I ended up in line at the customer service desk behind about, 100,000 other people that had missed their flights that day. And it was pretty clear that no one was going to get out that evening. So I waited in line for over 7 hours with all my luggage, and my luggage included 3 duffel bags full of cheese and other Greek goodies that I was really excited to bring home to you and to other people.
Greek cheese is so delicious.
It's so good.
And normally you'd be able to bring it back on a flight, eat it for dinner that evening, and that just wasn't the case here. And you had 3 duffel bags full of it.
Right, and I had gotten upgraded, which was really nice on that really long flight, but that meant that I was able to bring more checked bags and heavier checked bags for free.
Which meant extra trips to the grocery store.
There was so much stuff in those bags. And after dragging them on the luggage cart and waiting in the customer service line, and they said, well, we're not getting you out tonight, and we're not even sure if we're able to get you out tomorrow, but here's a standby ticket for tomorrow. So just come basically spend the day at the airport hoping that you get on one of these flights.
Oof.
And by the way, this is weather related, so we're not paying for your hotel.
Lovely.
So I think you actually booked me the last hotel in Manhattan that night, pretty much.
Or where was it? It was the last one within a couple miles of JFK, I think.
Yeah,
right?
I know JFK's not in Manhattan. I'm sorry. I don't know New York City very well. But yeah, so it was like the last hotel room. It was really expensive. I was so exhausted. It was so cold outside, and I had to leave my luggage cart at the airport. So I had to go outside and wait in this huge line for taxis in the freezing cold with these 3 70-pound duffel bags full of stuff, Oof. Plus my backpack. And I think I had a second carry-on too, because all my clothes were in my carry-ons.
Oh no.
It was really tiring. So
you have offered cheese for people to help?
I definitely would have, but everyone was in a pretty bad mood. They'd all been waiting in that 7-hour line with me, and they were all being told that they had to spend between $300 and $500 on Christmas Eve for a hotel.
Yeah, that's not something cheese will fix.
No, it was not something cheese could fix, unfortunately. But I eventually made it to the hotel, and it was a really expensive, really sketchy hotel. But it was a bed, you know, a bed and a shower, and it didn't have a fridge for the cheese, and even if it probably would have taken, you know, 6 or 8 mini fridges to fit all that cheese. So I just thought, you know, it's all hard cheese. It'll probably be fine. So I put down the thermostat in the room and went to bed. And I woke up the next day and things were a bit better. You know, I had a more helpful taxi driver this time. And I went back to the airport and I dragged these bags until I could find a luggage cart. And again, these are literally like over 200 pounds worth of luggage without wheels, all duffels.
How many calories? Like pound? I feel like calories is going to help me contextualize more than pounds.
I would guess probably over 100,000 calories. Ooh. I'm sure more. But I was able to get checked in and give them the bags, which was such a huge relief. So I bid farewell to my bags, and they luckily weren't charging me since I had had a first class ticket the day before. And then I went to wait in the airport. And it's Christmas Day at this point, so normally there wouldn't be that many people there, but everyone missed all their flights the previous day, so the airport's kind of packed. A really kind airport employee said, well, since you were upgraded yesterday, you can use the lounge today, which is really Ooh. Nice. So really, I can't complain too much, but I got to just sit. I think this was Terminal 4 at JFK, and I was sitting and watching all these planes taking off. It's a great place for plane spotting. And I got a seat on a flight to Salt Lake City that was supposed to leave at about noon. It's about, you know, 9:30, 10 in the morning now. And I thought, wow, this is great. I'm so excited. I'm getting out of here. I'll make it in time to make a connection to Boise. I'll be home for Christmas Day. And then I sit down, and I think they had hot dogs and champagne because it was Christmas.
Oh, that's nice of them.
Yeah, it was. It was good.
New York hot dogs. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And then
normally that's not the pairing I'd go for, but you know, when in Rome do is
in the moment. So I sit down, and then my phone starts going off, and I look at my phone and it says, your flight's been delayed.
Oh no.
I said, okay, well, you know, whatever. I'm in here. I'm comfortable. And the departure time just gets pushed back from noon, 12:30, 1, 1:30, 2, 2:30, 3. So this just keeps happening. And I'm just thinking, oh man, I don't know if I'm going to make it home today. And then finally, this goes on until about 6 p.m. And then at 6 p.m., I get this notification that says, your flight is now boarding. So I said, okay. So we go there. I get on the plane. I get the little notification that my bags of cheese have been loaded onto the plane.
Oh, good. Good. The important stuff.
Load us in. We push back from the gate. And then we sit at the gate for another couple hours.
Oh.
So...
Any idea why?
They never told us.
Let me guess, weather. They always say weather.
I think they did say, well, no, actually, it wasn't weather this time, because someone, as we're still sitting there at the gate, comes on the PA and says, we know most of you have connections in Salt Lake City. You've missed all of them.
Oh, no.
So we're just there thinking, okay, great. And then they said, as soon as you land, we're going to go to the service desk and we're handing out hotel vouchers. So it was something else this time. I'm not sure what it was. But we finally take off. We land in Salt Lake City. I go to the transfer desk or to the customer service desk. You know, again, now it's like midnight in Salt Lake City.
And you still have 3 duffel bags worth of cheese.
So I still have the 3 duffel bags. And the lady at the transfer desk says, oh, I can have your bags come out on carousel, whatever. And I look at her and I say, can you please just send my bags to Boise? And she looks at me, she goes, you don't want your stuff? And I said, no, I really do not want my stuff. Like, please just, you can even leave them outside if you want. It's nice and cold. It'll keep the cheese.
Oh.
And she started laughing and she goes, okay, you know what? I'll put a note for them to just keep your bags here. So thank God they kept my bags at the airport. And then she goes, I can get you out on the first flight to Boise. It's in 4 hours from now. And I'm just kind of looking at her and I'm like, Have a later flight to Boise?
At this point, how long had you been traveling?
I've been traveling for over 48 hours at this point. I mean, I had the night in the hotel. So then she started laughing again and was really nice. She goes, oh, yeah. She goes, everyone wants the early flight. So if you want a later flight, that's great. And I said, yes, I would really like to sleep in. So she goes, yeah, that's fine. And she books me a later flight. And she goes, and actually, this one's empty, so you can even fly first class on this one.
Oh.
Which was very nice of her. So then finally, I went to this hotel. There's no Ubers or taxis because all these planes are full of people that miss their connections.
Right.
And, anyway, this little shuttle finally comes and takes me to this hotel, and I get there and I walk into the room and the toilet's overflowing.
Oh, no.
So of course I just started laughing at this point. There wasn't much else to do. And I call down to the front desk and they're like, well, we can get a plumber tomorrow. And I said, well, I don't have a toilet to use. And they said, you can come use the one downstairs. I said, okay, whatever. So I go downstairs and then I come up to my room and the front desk guy is in my room just going crazy on this toilet, like with this huge plunger and this mallet, and he's just like really yanking around in the thing and he keeps flushing it and there's like water all over the floor. And this is, again, now this is, you know, 2 in the morning.
Did you get to sleep at all?
Well, he eventually did something to the toilet that made it work, and good. Yes, he left, and I went to sleep, and I passed out, and I was so grateful that I had asked for the later flight the next day. And, yeah, then the next day I went to the airport, and I checked in, and they said, oh, yeah, we have your bags, we're gonna put them on the plane for you, which was great, and then, got on the plane. Flew to Boise, it was completely uneventful, and then all the bags arrived, and all the cheese was still cold, and none of it had gone bad, I don't think, and all the goodies were still in there from Greece, and it was, I think the total time to get home was, I left on Christmas Eve, like 2 a.m. Boise time in the morning, and then I got home on the 26th in the afternoon.
So the moral of the story, the cheese was delicious, by the way. Worth all of my effort. Poor Sophia. I guess you'd say the moral of the story is when things go wrong, just keep going?
I mean, unless you want to live in JFK, you just gotta keep going.
And you got home eventually. Sure, you missed Christmas, but we had like a nice Christmas dinner the next day.
Yeah, no, it all worked out. And we had a lot of cheese with our dinner too, I think. And Christmas cookies for my grandma. But I think I might be done with traveling with duffel bags.
Yeah, we can always, next time we'll just ship the cheese. We'll UPS the cheese.
Well, only as much cheese as fits in the carry-on.
You've had some other just ridiculous travel situations. Like 3 duffels full of cheese is just the start for Sophia.
There's been a lot of good ones. I'm trying to think.
Like, you lost your grandfather on a cruise once, right?
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Or weren't you also, like, maybe kidnapped in Cairo?
Well, I don't want to scare people away from these places,
well,
but...
It may be kidnapped. It was a soft kidnapping, not like a...
It was a soft kidnapping. I think the situation was my bestie Maria and I were there with high school track and field, or with a high school track and field team.
Because going from Athens, where you were going to high school, from Athens to Cairo, that's about as far as like going from Atlanta to Orlando.
Yeah, it's like an hour flight. It's not very far. And we were, my last 2 years of high school, I got to go to the American Community Schools of Athens from a really generous scholarship that a local person provided to 15 Greek school students, which is really awesome. Shout out to Mr. Alafouzos, if he's listening to this.
Hi, Mr. Alafouzos.
And as part of the track and field team, our big annual meet was at the American College of Egypt. And they had a high school. And we were there as part of the team, and they took us to the pyramids, which were super awesome. And the activity was we got to ride camels around the pyramids. So very touristy, but you know, when you're in high school, it's very cool. This was just when cell phones were starting to have cameras. There's some really grainy pictures of all this. And they had run out of camels by the time Maria and I were supposed to get our camel. It was 2 people per camel, so we were going to ride it together. So these other guys came up and said, oh no, we work for this company, but we have horses instead of camels. So we thought, whatever, horses are great. We got on the horse, and this guy leads us away from our group pretty far away, actually. Like, the pyramids were getting smaller and smaller in the distance.
Oh, oh no.
And he says, no, no, I'm taking you a shortcut. I'm taking you a special way. And then finally, he takes us to these other guys that were out there on horses and says, we're not going to take you back to your group unless you pay us.
You were high school students.
We were high school students. So we just kind of looked at each other and thought, wow, this is probably about as bad as it seems. You know, there's two high school girls and a bunch of these guys that we've never met before, and they're asking for money. And so we opened up our wallets, and we each had maybe 20 euros in our wallets, because again, you know, high school students, we didn't have credit cards. I didn't even have my cell phone with me, I don't think, that day. And they weren't super happy with what we had in our wallets, but they looked through our wallets and saw we actually didn't have anything else. Luckily, they took us back to the rest of the group. I know there's a lot of other ways that seems like it could have gone. So it was, overall, it was a good thing. We were a little bit spooked, and we told our coach what happened, and he was pretty upset. And I think that they stopped doing excursions with that particular tour company after that.
Good.
Yeah, but then it was all good, though. I think we both ended up getting a couple medals at that track meet, so we weren't too upset.
Congrats. Yeah.
Thanks. We got over it. We had other stuff to focus on.
Look at you not letting a somewhat kidnappy situation ruin a good trip.
I mean, it would have been a shame to ruin the rest of the trip.
Huh. Yeah, I think the rest of us can learn something from that attitude. What else? You are just so good at salvaging a bad situation. Like, there have been so many times where luggage wouldn't show up and you'd still make the trip happen.
Well, most of the time luggage does show up. It can take a while. Yeah, I've been pretty fortunate, I'd say. I think over the course of my life, I've only had one suitcase that was completely lost. I've had some bags arrive several weeks after I did, but I've had some bags arrive a little worse for the wear, but never anything too bad.
What would you say is your proudest accomplishment getting out of a weird travel situation?
Oh, I'd have to think about this one a little bit.
I remember a time we were hiking on Mount Washington, and you recognized pretty quickly that I was having symptoms of hypothermia. And like, you've basically prepared yourself for this situation. You not only have wilderness medicine experience, but you teach wilderness medicine courses. And you're like, oh, I know exactly what to do. Now I just need to convince Zach that he has hypothermia before he hurts himself.
Right. That ended well. That ended about as well as it could have. Yeah, I mean, I would say rather than referencing a specific travel situation, I think it's good to just talk about the importance of being aware of where you are and what is happening around you. Because most places you go, most people are nice and want, at worst, they're just indifferent. At best, you know, they want the best for you and everyone else around them. So I think just keeping some awareness of what your needs are in a situation and where you're going and, you know, what the trail looks like if you're outside, I think that can go a really long way rather than sitting around and catastrophizing or anticipating any bad situation that might happen.
Okay, so just keep your head up, be adaptable. There are, of course, some tips that anyone should have, like if you're traveling abroad, keep paper photocopies of passports and important documents in case the real ones go missing. Now let's take another quick break, and then let's ask ourselves, why do we put ourselves through this? For the sake of travel. Whether we've inspired you to add a new place to your bucket list or gave you helpful tips for getting there, leaving your review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify is one of the best ways you can help other listeners find episodes like this one. Thanks in advance, and now back to the show. Sophia, you've told us about like the saga with three duffel bags full of cheese, about getting kidnapped and extorted in Cairo, about some of the other just absurd situations you've found yourself in and that we've found ourselves in.
I will say kidnapped and extorted is maybe a little bit more than what happened.
I mean, sure, but why do we do this to ourselves?
Because it's fun. Because it's a break from the routine. Because there's a lot of cool places to see. And despite our 4K HD screens, I think seeing certain things in person responsibly can mean a lot. Although for me personally, I prefer to go places and maybe skip some of the more popular sites and just exist and watch what other people do and wonder what it would be like to be a resident of that place for a few days and what it would be like to have grown up there and how you would perceive things a little differently.
Some of my favorite travel memories together have been when we would take an extended layover somewhere. Instead of rushing through Charles de Gaulle Airport in 45 minutes, we instead would schedule a day or two in Paris before our next flight. We would just, instead of going downtown to the Eiffel Tower or the Louvre or anything, we tooled around the Montmartre neighborhood and had croissants, sat at sidewalk cafes, sipping wine, watching all of the Parisians go about their day, imagining like what life must be like in that city. And it was such a cool experience.
It was. It's interesting to think about what time is rush hour. Why is rush hour at different times in different cities?
Oh, yeah.
And are people dropping off their kids on the way to school? Or are their kids walking themselves to the bus stops or walking themselves to school? Do people have time to stop at a bakery on the way there? Who's out and about in the middle of the day? Is it who you would expect? Or are there other folks just tooling around?
Yeah, it's funny you say kids. I grew up in a small town where everyone knew each other. It was a very safe town, but parents were skeptical of letting their kids walk to the school bus stop, whereas you grew up in a city of, how many people are in Athens? About a couple million?
I think it's a little more right now. Well, there's downtown Athens.
3 million?
The metro area is even more, I think.
Okay, but you and your sibling, you and your brother and your friends would all take public transit to school.
Yeah, we took public transit from a pretty young age. We were able to walk to our elementary school. It was a really safe place to grow up. We had a lot of unsupervised time, which I think kids kind of miss out on these days, which is a shame.
Yeah, that's when so much personal growth comes from those moments where you might bite off just a little more than you could chew. That's one of the reasons I love traveling, because it gets you out of your comfort zone and you're just way more aware of everything around you. You get into situations that are fun and rewarding, and sometimes you do have to problem solve. Like, great, I've gotten up this mountain. Now, how do I get back down this mountain?
A lot of times the way down is harder than the way up. I'll say that.
Yeah, pro tip. I think also I've known people who would say, why would I go through all of the effort to hop on an airplane and spend all of this money just so that I can see the Parthenon, for example, when I could put on a virtual reality headset? And you miss out on so much if you're not actually experiencing the culture, if you're not curious about the people that you're interacting with. Like, the Parthenon is cool, but at the end of the day, it's a bunch of rocks that people a couple thousand years ago lugged up a hill. I'm sure I'm insulting a ton of people with that, but a lot more went into it. But there's so much more to experience than just seeing the sights.
Well, actually, going off your Parthenon example, I think that's a good one, because the marble for the Parthenon came from this Greek island called Naxos, which probably doesn't mean anything to a lot of people. It's a popular touristy island. It's a beautiful island. I enjoy going there too. But unless you go to Greece and actually walk up to the Acropolis and see where the Parthenon is and look at the size of those rocks and then travel maybe by train or by bus from there to the port of Piraea or Piraeus with a more American accent. And then you take this ferry to Naxos, and then you really get an appreciation of how the folks that built it had to navigate often pretty wavy, tumultuous sea, and then how they had to go to the port, unload it, transport it to a different part of Athens while bypassing a couple mountain ranges that surround Athens.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So it really brings to life a story that you could easily dismiss as impressive, but not that impressive. And then when you actually see the scale that you're talking about with transporting that marble, I think it makes you appreciate things like the Parthenon a lot more. Now, this isn't really about the Parthenon specifically, which I think most listeners have probably picked up on. This is more, you can use that though as a, you can insert any experience, any of your own travel experiences or adventure experiences. You know, it doesn't have to be a fancy flight to a big city. You know, maybe there's some hill in your backyard that you've never hiked up and you think, oh yeah, it's tall, but it's not that tall. But when you actually hike it and you have memories of the places where you thought maybe this is too hard, I should turn around, and what it sounded like and what it smelled like. And I think you just get a deeper appreciation. I think that's why we travel, even though it's a pain.
Yeah, and for us, these days, travel is on easy mode. We don't, going to the Naxos example, we have scheduled ferry services and flights, and multiple flights a day where you could go from any major city to Athens and then just a hop, skip, and a jump to Naxos. I sometimes think about the Polynesian cultures who would hop onto more or less canoes and small primitive sailboats, go out into the void. Just because it's so ingrained in who we are as humans to see what's out there.
I think they just use the stars to navigate, from what I remember learning.
That's still so impressive. We truly are traveling on easy mode, and I imagine how you have more of an anthropology background than I do, and probably than one of your degrees is in anthropology, and when people would venture out, did they have any idea what was out there? Do we know what they might have been seeking?
I think they were seeking what we're seeking, just a different experience. I think curiosity is an innate human trait, and I think if we don't nurture that trait one way or another, it will push us to do extraordinary things. Maybe you want it to push you to get in a canoe and travel across the world or across the known world, but I think it's just an expression of something really uniquely human to see what's out there.
I think that just about says it all, and that's really what we're hoping to accomplish with this show, too, because seeing what's out there is such a tremendous part of the human experience. You have seen much of what's out there. I recall once we were paging through a National Geographic article or magazine together, and because you had those flight benefits as a kid, you would say, "I've been there." I turned the page. "That place is cool too." I turned the page. "Oh, there's really good banh mi up that road."
I still have a lot to see myself, so I'm excited to keep traveling and hopefully in ways that keep travel sustainable, both for the places we visit and for us as travelers. That's probably a discussion for a different episode, though.
And we'll absolutely have you on the show again. This has been a real treat getting to hear all of these stories again. I've heard them before. I'm glad we got to share them with you. So thanks for being on the show, Sophia.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to you for listening to the Near and Far podcast. If you like this conversation, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your fellow explorers. You can find the Near and Far podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, nearandfar.travel, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm your host, Zachary Ellis. Stay curious, stay adventurous, and stay exploring near and far.